November. I'd like to declare the meeting open at 5:32, and in doing so acknowledge the Kaliyara people whose land we're on today, respectfully acknowledging the contribution of Kaliyara leaders past, present and future in all working together for the betterment of the future city of Port Hedland. Welcome.
Okay, item two, recording of attendance and apologies. Attendance as listed. Apologies nil. 2.3, approved leave of absence, Councillor Jeanbach. Item 3, response to previous questions taken on notice. 3.1.1, Ms Joan Foley. 3.1.2, Ms Jasmine Pearson. 3.2.1, Councillor DeCash. 3.2.2, Councillor Gillingham. 3.2.3, Councillor Jacob. Item 4, public time. Item 4.1, public question time. Could those who have a public question please have a show of hands? 4, 5, fantastic. I declare public question time open now at 5:34. Please stand at the podium, CEO. Is that
please.
Please state your name nice and clear as we are recording the meeting.
Can I get the
balance
of the
CEO?
Through you, Madam Mayor. I'm direct that to the Director of Corporate Services.
The total balance of the mini fund is $16,311,149.74.
Can I get the balance of the Marina Reserve account?
CEO?
Likewise, Madam Mayor. I'll defer that to the Director of Corporate Services.
Through the Chair, we have a reserve bank account which incorporates more than just the Marina Reserve. I'm happy to give you that balance if you tell us, but the Marina Reserve will have 40 million.
Mm-hmm.
I've asked previously why the Marina Reserve funds were in the municipal fund, and the reply was all contributions accredited to the municipal before being diverted. The Act differently. Can I get the reasons why the town has breached section 6.1.1.1 and 2B? I have a copy of the Act here
if you
want me to read it. Through you, Madam Mayor. My answer is that the town of Port Hedland has not breached the Act. Our auditors audit all the transactions of the town of Port Hedland. If there are any breaches, the auditors will certainly bring those to our attention. And that is common practice for funds to be diverted throughout reserves as long as at the end of the year they're in the appropriate reserve account.
Can I get the information relating to the votes by council that authorise the use of the funds from the Marina Reserve by absolute majority for a different purpose?
CEO. This is referring to a decision that was made on the 13th of January. Is that correct? Sorry, I might need help.
I'm sorry, we need to understand the full resolution.
Yeah. Do you want a copy of the resolution?
I want a copy of the decision that has allowed council to use the $40 million in the municipal fund.
Yep, that was set out.
The decision is also by absolute majority. I can't find it in the minute, in the agenda, that has allowed you to use that.
Yeah. Or take it on notice and we'll be able to give you that extract of that.
So I get the relevant information about the advertising undertaken as per local government regulations to proceed with the change of use as well.
Yes, sure, certainly. So take that on notice and we can give you the full, because it was actually detailed in our report.
Can I get the interest rate for the municipal fund?
As of today or yesterday, tomorrow? See you?
Again, through you, Madam Mayor, through the Credit and Director of Corporate Services.
Thank you, Chair. The current interest rate is 3.25%.
3.25%?
In the municipal. The interest rate for the reserve accounts?
See you?
Similarly, I will pass it on. The minus N is all our investments are covered off through a variety of the four banks, correct?
That may be through other institutions, so there's a whole range of institutions that we get back for investors. two significant investors that do have their own interest rate and obviously investment term. And the reserve debt is, as far as I'm aware, the interest rate is the same.
Last council meeting I asked if the marina funds would be put into the designated reserve account. The response was the funds will be transferred into a reserve account which holds all our reserves. Local government financial management regulations 1996 has a different opinion. 17 reserve accounts. One, a reserve account is to have a title that clearly identifies the purpose for which the money in the account is set aside. Also, 27G, in relation to each reserve account, an estimate of opening balance, so on. 38, in regulations as well, a reserve account information, which is fairly detailed. Have these regulations been met?
See you.
Through you, Madam Mayor, yes I have, and the annual budget contains all that information. I don't have my budget in front of me, but the budget indicates the nature and purpose of each reserve. It dictates details and opening balance and a projected closing balance.
Again, I've tried to find that information and I can't find it. Could I get a copy of that?
Yes. Yes.
Local Government Act is very clear on the process around the restricted and reserve money on the 30th of August. I asked about $1.5 million removed from the Marina Reserve. Can I get the information relating to the vote by Council that authorised the removal of those funds from the Marina Reserve by a certain majority?
The $1.5 million is an estimated budget expenditure for this year in accordance with the cash flow that Council agreed at the end of July Council meeting. Those funds have not been removed from that bank account and will not be until there's a formal funding agreement signed in order to make the associated transfers.
It has not been removed from the Marina Reserve Service.
Thank you. Are there any further public questions? Yes, please come forward.
Public questions.
Can you just, sir. No, it's just questions. Next section will be statements, so I'll make sure that you do. Yep, and if you can just please state your name nice and clear.
Thank you very much, Carol. It's clearly a very long time coming to respond here. I got a couple of questions. One is involving this new development taking place in North Circular Road, Burlock Drive intersection, because houses or residential property is now going to be built within that land. Will council seriously consider moving the rubbish dump from a pleasant location to a location at least 2 kilometres further out of town?
Yes, and we're certainly looking even further than that, so we are well progressed with that planning.
That's good. Thanks. Yep. And the second one involves, oh yeah, 2 years ago, this month, November 2010, I asked council to seriously consider proposing a form of education review of building a brand new senior high school right here in the town of Port Haven. What has happened to that situation?
Subsequent to that request, I met with the Minister for Education, who was at that time Liz Constable, and certainly we had a very good discussion. It was certainly said that in terms of having more high school facilities and services, whether they be state or private, there is a need to have more children, more people, particularly that 14 to 17, 18, so that year 9 to 12 in particular is one where we need a lot more students. So effectively I was told to come back when you have 1,200 students. We're currently getting close to 700 now, so we're continuing that push. Once we do have a greater student population, then we'll be able to pursue that a bit more.
That's a question. Yes, and the third question involves, I think I asked you this last month, I'm not sure, mm-hmm. I honestly can't remember, but I'll ask it again anyway, because it's probably still going on.
Yep.
Unfortunately, for whatever reason, the HP Magnet, once I'm afraid, the traffic between 5:30 and 7:30 a.m. on weekday mornings when everyone's going to work. And as a result, we're getting traffic jams at the Warwick Vale intersection with all these trains going to and from. Could the council ask PHP management to stop all rail traffic between the hours of 5:30 and 7:30 a.m. every morning whilst we have this traffic build-up situation going on in South End?
Yep, we'll talk with them again and raise that issue.
Okay, thanks. I've also got here a list of numbers of houses, as you asked me last week, last month.
With the newspapers?
Houses, which do not want Northwest Telegraph, Hoover Echo, or Junk Mail, and as a result, they leave it outside their houses and trash the whole streets.
Yep.
These are the numbers of the houses.
Fantastic.
In those streets that I walk along, nowhere else, these are just the streets that I walk along most evenings, for many of these houses. They leave the people don't live there, or if they do live there, they don't care.
All right, fantastic.
Thank you very much.
Pass it up. I'll make sure the governance receives it, and we'll pass it on to the respective newspaper distributors. Any further public questions?
My name's John Vance. My question straight up is, what is actually the zoning of Volta?
CEO?
I'm sorry.
So, South Hedland Rural Estate. We've got a number of non-compliance issues in the South Hedland Rural Estate that we're pursuing currently, and we're working through the process that requires.
That was the next question, to bring it back to current zoning.
Well, it's not a matter of zoning, it's more that there's unfortunately people aren't being compliant with the current zoning, so we need to make sure that everyone is compliant in terms of the current zoning. So we're working through that with our compliance team and our lawyers.
Thank you.
Thanks. Are there any further questions?
I would like to ask the Shire what the Shire is doing about Hamilton Road.
Sorry, yep. Can we have your name, please?
Sorry, David.
I was in Kildare last Thursday.
Okay.
Yep. With a car, somebody had a renewable and something on at the Mandan Centre. And the basketball was on, and I was nearly Kildare. I had to run on the bay to miss you the car coming out of the renewable.
Right.
Now, that road used to be, could be made a dual carriageway all the way. Why isn't it? It's because years ago, one of the councillors owned the garage there. And he said it might interfere with business, so the Shire saw fit to put dual carriageway there, 300 yards, and dual carriageway there.
That's not the reason, sir, and I can still clearly... let's just answer that one first. So I'll refer over to the Director of Engineering.
Through the Chair, the section I'm talking about, we've actually got designed to dual line that this year. So that'll be going, the works, the section you're talking about will be dual line, and there'll be a roundabout going into the new stadium. Those works will commence after the cyclone season. So that'll be probably
the subject. My second question is, I wrote to the previous two CEOs of this council regarding the state agent advertising blocks in Wedgefield with multiple accommodation on them. Now, some of these blocks have got 15, 20 people living on them, and they're paying the same rates as me as a buyer by the system. Now, what is the Shire going to do? Spend hundreds of thousands of dollars of ratepayers' money on court cases to get these people up there, like they did in Boston Lodge a few years ago?
We are working through a process. As you're aware, sir, there's a very critical shortage in terms of housing and land availability and accommodation. So, again, with our compliance team, we are working through our options, and we've been writing to all the people in Wedgefield, making sure they're nice and clear with the process that we're going through, trying to keep a nice and clear and a nice and even approach to all.
Now, my last question is about this police camp. There is a camp at the police station was put there to build the police station. The police station has been finished 1 year. Why is the camp still there and people living in it?
Well, I can refer to the director for that one.
Through the chair, we can have our compliance officer look at it. But once again, it's actually on state land, and state combinations don't necessarily have to comply with our advice from a compliance perspective. They're considered to be works as such. So, but we can have our compliance officer have a look at it.
Any further questions?
No.
Thank you very
much.
And that's David Pennington for the record. Thank you. Are there any further public questions? Thank you. Please state your name nice and clear.
That's John May. My question is in relation to the late items on the agenda regarding the old hospital site and the potential rezoning to the agenda. I think that's a very positive thing to do, and great thing to have thought of it. I'd like to ask when that is considered, that we also consider extending that area to include the south side of Auburn Street, where there's current development in planning.
Director, I'll refer to you.
Through the Chair, the team members in front of Council for consideration tonight really is just a possible site. In relation to expanding that, Council has budget for preparing new planning for this financial year. So it's probably something to consider as part of that project rather than going through a swap and zone.
And is there any idea of how long that experience might be taking?
For the Chair, I'm assuming it's been a 12-13 month process.
Great. Any further public questions?
It's
a very good question. Yeah, unfortunately it is due to the infill sewage works that are being conducted by Water Corp. Do we have any, Director, any idea when they will be?
Through the Chair, they're basically closing that project out now. We've had repeated discussions with regard to the state of some of those works and requesting that they are repaired to a point that is satisfactory for traffic. But we have had some issues with the contractor. And the contract is with the Water Corporation, not for us, so we're going through Water Corporation. It is a more difficult process, I think. I'd say within the next month we'll be able to basically close down most of that.
I'll let you do it before I close it.
Thank you. Any further public questions?
Oh,
get a copy of the 28th tonight?
Yeah, we're going to consider an item on that tonight, and then we'll be able to follow that process. So it's coming up on the agenda.
Okay, so can I get a document?
Well, you'll need to follow the process. So,
well, we've been following the process for a couple of years, so it's going to just change.
Please follow the process. Any further questions? Okay, I'd like to declare public question time closed at 5.50. CEO, you were going
through you, Madam Mayor, I just wanted to encourage members of the public that you can ask questions of the administration any time you like. You know, sometimes if there is a time-sensitive issue, you may want to ring through the administration and get an answer rather than holding your questions for public question time at ordinary council meetings. Notwithstanding, you always have a right to ask a question at a council meeting. But just saying, if there are time-sensitive issues, please come forward to the administration and we'll try to answer those questions as early as we can.
Thank you, CEO. Okay, item 4.2, public statement time. This is the time for public statements. Please come forward.
Good evening, everybody. My name is George. I'm in the socialist, the local wall. I want to make a statement regarding Bosnia. We've got thousands of people living like rabbits in caravans and whatever, under the hat, in pits of tins, and everything else. And we've been fighting for the last 2 years to get Bosnia to chop it down to a smaller lot. The council has knocked it back a couple of times. Now the minister has overturned the council decision. And I like to see that the council does the right thing by us. We've been doing this for a very long time. It's about time the council admit that they're wrong and allow us to do what we want to do instead of us building a shed and putting rooms in there to put our people that are working for us. If you don't allow me to build what I want to build, I'll put a shed up and then you sue me. And I'll put 5 rooms in there to keep my people in. I'm not talking about me personally, I'm talking about everybody else. Here we are, fighting for 2 years to do what we want to do in Bosnia, and yet, we can't get it to do it. It's time that we allow this to go through. Please. Thank you.
Thank you for your statement. Any further public statements? Please state your name nice and clear.
Yeah, Chris Waller's the name, I don't know. I can't remember exactly when this happened. Within, say, the 4 or 5 day time frame following October 21, when I returned here from 4.5 weeks overseas, which meant that my house was vacant.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't find baby appliances or houses or any place. Someone within that period tried to break into my house.
Mm-hmm.
And couldn't get in because my windows are securely locked. I've got brand new cyclone shutters on my house. I've got 4 brand new entrance exit doors on my house. It is secure, but the fact is that someone tried to break in. Mm-hmm. And climbing over the back fence, which is brand new, walked up to the back door, tried at the back sliding door, something went around to the back of the house, tried again through the front window again, but it couldn't succeed because there are the front windows are security lock someone. So I wanted to bring this issue up because even though we are apparently doing a lot to try and fight crime in this town, unfortunately there are still some people who think they can commit crime to get away with it. But we didn't do it at least not this time. Thanks.
Thank you. Did you report it to the police?
No. No, I wanted to make the issue about it here.
Are there any further public statements?
Good afternoon. My name is Paul Largent, the regional manager of Rawfine Doctor Service and Children in Kingley. Thank you for this opportunity. I wish to make a statement in regard to prior consideration of 11.4.1.1, the race condition for RFDS. Just a quick recap, if I may. The RFDS has been here since 1935. We have 6 doctors funded, 6 pilots, 6 nurses. We maintain 2 day shifts, 1 night shift. 365 days a year. I previously had made an application on behalf of Royal Flying Doctor Service for rate concessions, and I acknowledge the challenge for council in the sense that the closing date that was 31st of March, and I didn't arrive in the building until after that. So I'm grateful for the initial consideration of that rate concession application. I just wish to draw to council's attention the brief that was provided to you in the sense of in terms of the fact we have RFDS has made a net loss in penalty of $16 million in Western Australia, and in 11-12 it's improving, it's $800,000. We maintain 14 owned residences and 13 leased premises for our staff. I think it's important to note too that council, of these residences that we maintain, our doctors conduct more than 40,000 consultations, remote consultations in Western Australia. 95% of our consultations that our doctors are conducted from home, from their residences. In summary, I'd be very grateful for council's consideration, noting that we did stay, knowing that we're a critical aeromedical evacuation resource in the program. And I think it's worth reminding members of public and council that we provide that intensive care unit capability, which is only really available in the third. So that's why we're here to stay. And I think I'd be most grateful for some consideration and exercising the council's discretion, noting the late submission that I already made, noting that we conduct 95% of our doctor consultations from our residences, at least from the six doctor residences, and I'd be grateful for that consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. So, councillors, you'll take that into consideration as we consider item 11.4.1.1. Any further public statements?
Good evening, councillors. My name is Paul Cunningham from Greg Roll Associates. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to briefly talk in relation to late item 12.1, the proposed care amendment number 62 for the old hospital site at Block 4-5 in Auburn. Greg Roll Associates acts on behalf of FINBA in relation to this proposed care amendment. Firstly, we'd like to thank the town staff for their efforts in getting the proposed amendment to tonight's meeting. Through consultation with the town's planning staff, we understand an alternative recommendation has been proposed and forwarded to elected members that more accurately reflects the zoning density and additional uses sought at the site. We're supportive of the planning department's revised recommendation for initiation of proposed care amendment 62, and therefore request council endorses the administration's recommendation. That's all, and I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further public statements?
Good evening again. I'm an advocate on that. I just want to have a quick word, or thanks for the opportunity to have a quick word in support of one of the items on the agenda regarding lot 250, 70 Morgan Street, 18 units development. I'm one of the owners of that lot. It's holding trust, has been for the last 15 years, owned by myself and my brothers. First quarter's a single house for children to live in when the HBI plant was being built. It's been held ever since. For a number of years we've been looking to develop this. We now think we've got a very, very positive scheme on the table. We've been working in this consultation with town planning staff for over a year to get to the point where we are tonight. We bought absolutely into the Cooper City decision, and we've taken, I grew up here, spent years, going to high school and whatnot here, understand a little bit about the benefits of living in Port Hedland. We tried to come up with a design that, on the one hand, doesn't lose that, and on the other, recognise the need for other quality accommodations in the area. We think that we've delivered that, so we should be very appreciative of your endorsement and positive response to the proposal, and get available for any questions.
Right, thank you. the councillors, you'll take that into consideration when we consider that item in the course of the agenda. Okay, any further public statements?
In relation to the question asked about the marina reserve money, if my questions are answered, I'll stop asking questions about the marina money. The questions that I ask are supported by your own figures in your monthly statement financial activity.
This is a statement.
Well, sorry, all I was going to do is I invite Mr. Blanco in for a discussion with myself and the Director of Corporate Services to actually go through this process so you actually understand how those reserve funds are managed, where they currently sit, and how we report upon them.
I'm going to ask questions about this in the public arena because all my questions that I ask are, you know, I'm just taking brick walls of them all. Their questions not been answered, which obviously led me believe there's some serious problems in the finances of the bank. Now, the last agenda item relating to the deputy's outburst, I was at that meeting and clearly there were many breaches of the Act and standing orders. It is convenient for council to say once the quorum was lost, the minutes stopped recording. Again, a clear manipulation of events. The facts are the meeting was not closed by the chairman. The chair at the time, being the deputy mayor, is not inexperienced in these proceedings. In fact, it serves over 10 years on council. I've been questioning the manipulation of minutes for a number of years now. But the chair continues to allow this manoeuvring. The officer's recommendation does not reflect the standard required to be a councillor. And it's disappointing. It is a disappointing response. But like I've said on countless occasions, it's not surprising to me.
Any further public statements? Okay, I declare public statement time closed at 6:04. Thank you very much, members of the public, for taking part. Okay, item 5, questions for members without notice. Deputy Mayor?
Madam Mayor, I don't have a question about statement. I can use that.
As long as it's quick.
Madam Mayor, on the 6th of September 2012, I was acting mayor and chaired a special council meeting called by Councillor Carter, Councillor Gillingham, and Bill Zombeck. The three people I mentioned walked out of the meeting.
Sorry, Deputy Mayor, that will relate to an item that will be under consideration, so it's best to have that as part of the discussion and debate in that time. Do you have any questions?
No, Madam Mayor, I'll bring up that. Thank you.
Councillor Carter?
No.
Councillor Gillingham?
Oh, yes, just a couple of words, if I may, to the Chair, Mayor Hart. Regarding the item with Irene Coffin's painting, the marble bar painting, which it says at item 3.1.2, I'm just asking, it says here that the painting did not need to be repaired, but I do realise that it was damaged, and I'd like to know who actually repaired the painting before it went back up on the wall.
Mm. CEO?
I'll have to take that on notice, Madam Mayor.
Yeah. All right, oh, thank you. All right. And also regarding the median strip, my question 3.2.2, up until last week, I couldn't see any difference in the plants coming back to life in that median strip in South Heaven. So has that actually been rectified now so that the water is actually going to those plants, or do new plants have to now be put in there to replace plants that have died?
Sir?
Madam Mayor, I'll defer to the Director of Engineering Services.
Through the Chair, I believe that irrigation issues have been rectified. Although we have been having some problems with supply when it has been turned on. From caught to our tanks, so there have been a few issues still. But we will replace anything if that's done once we resolve the water.
Oh, thank you. And my last thing is, regarding my resolution to council tonight, just may I ask through the chair, in case Deputy Mayor Georgia Cash does possibly wish to make an apology to the town of Port Hedland.
Well, that will be considered in the item. Thank you. Councillor Hooper?
Thank you.
Councillor Jacob?
No, thank you, Madam Mayor.
Councillor Hunt?
I do. I've been asked by concerned residents to ask whether, given that we're now in cyclone season, whether the landing building site has all the necessary authorisations, permits, and is it compliant that we know that we're in cyclone season.
CEO?
We do get into the cyclone season. We do normally issue or send out emails and letters to all the building authorities out there.
Any further questions, Councillor?
No, that's it.
Right. Thank you, Councillors. Okay, item 6, declaration by members who have given due consideration to all matters contained in the business paper before us. Can I please have a show of hands? Okay, 7-0, thank you. Item 7, confirmation of minutes of the previous meeting. 7.1, confirmation of the minutes of the ordinary meeting of council held on Wednesday the 24th of October. Do I have any points of clarification? Move, Councillor Carter. Seconded, Councillor Jacob. No one against? Carried 7-0, sorry. 7.2, confirmation of minutes of the special meeting of council held on Wednesday the 14th of November. Do I have any points of clarification?
No.
Move, Councillor Carter. Seconded, Councillor Hunt. Any against? Motion carried 7-0. Okay, item 8, announcements by chairperson without discussion. Very proud as Mayor in terms of the community and the working group and everyone's involvement in the recent cruise ship visits. I think for the town and for what we did and what we're able to achieve and put on with the cruise ship, a massive Radiance of the Seas coming on the Thursday the 25th of October, and then the Voyager of the Seas, which was even bigger again on the 2nd of November, to service, look after, to provide what we provided for those two cruise ships, I think was a fantastic effort. So well done to the entire community, but in particular to our council staff, and CEO, if you can pass it back on to our team that helped with the organisation of the volunteer committee, getting everyone down there, getting everything to happen. It just worked a treat, and we look forward to the cruise ships, which are scheduled next February and March. So looking forward to those. And I think another proud moment was when we were very fortunate and successful in being named the 2012 Western Australia's Tidy Town Sustainable Community of the Year. And I believe, CEO, you have something for us.
Madam Mayor, yes. I also had the privilege of being in Perth to be at the awards presentation. And for the members of the public and for council, this is the state award for the 2012 Tidy Town Sustainable Community of the Year. Town of Port Hedland, as an organisation, the community of Hedland, it is a Hedland award, to make that very clear. And I think the great work done by, our stakeholders in the New Building Project in South Hedland and also Jackson Constructions, together with our staff, we put together an absolutely brilliant submission, which I'm sure got us over the line by one point from Esperance, which is my old stomping ground. So I claim Cronulla after being here for 4 weeks when this was announced. But Madam Mayor, this is the certificate for the 2012 award, and we're also received a cheque, which I'm not sure if it's coming yet, but I think there's a cheque for $2,000 as the state winner. And there's also another award from the Packaging Stewardship Forum. So again, I think as we have both indicated, this is credit to the community of Hedland, and it's credit to all those community groups, all the volunteers, all the participation that they got in many events, in many groups, in many forums to actually get Hedland across the line in this award. And we now look forward to representing, having Hedland represented at the National Awards in 2013. So, with a bit of good luck,
We know the hard work's been done. We've got some judging to occur in February. We're hoping that we, well, so we think we deserve it, to take home the National Award in 2013.
How about the crowd's voice? Fantastic, CEO. Thank you very much for bringing the trophy back to where it rightfully belongs here in Port Hedland. And the Tidy Towns National Judging Visit will be the 20th of February and the 21st of February. So please, everyone, pencil those dates in and please get involved and be proud and help show off our great town.
Pick up those newspapers.
We're on to it. Okay. Item 9, reports by elected members without discussion. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I attended a few things in November, but not in order. First of all, was the White Ribbon Day, March. It was more a marathon than a march, but it was long. It was well attended, and great to see the number of males who participated, and of course, not leaving out women and children who took part in the march. Well done by everybody. I attended the Regional Centre's Future Forum, well attended by large and small towns and shires. Yesterday I attended the Hedland Youth Leadership Collision, that's what they're called now, the relaunch of that youth leadership. It was fantastic to see and hear the youth of this town participating in trying to solve our youth issues such as drug and alcohol issues, youth accommodation, entertainment, etc., and not fully relying on people like us to try and resolve their issues. Although I did make it quite clear that if they ever required assistance from the council, it was always available. I also met with Bill Johnson, Labor MLA, at the Chamber of Commerce to discuss the underground power in Hedland. And today, I and others attended the FMG Port and Rail Operations and the opening of the Andrew Forest Bridge, which is what I'm calling it, on the Northwest Coastal Highway. And really well done to FMG and on all of their aspects. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Councillor Carter.
No, thank you, Madam Mayor.
Councillor Gillingham.
Hi, yeah, just a short one, actually, thank you. I actually got to see the Hedland Health Campus from the inside out recently,
mm-hmm.
and I'd like to thank everybody for their well wishes for the 4 days I had to unfortunately stay in hospital. But thank everybody for their wishes and prayers from the Town of Port Hedland and also from councillors for their well wishes and also some of the public. I've had people from the public and some of you are here today who continue to phone me every day and thank you very much. That's really great. I had great help and support in the hospital.
Mm.
I do have to say though that you know, when you're in there, they find out that you're a councillor, the nurses come to you, the doctors come to you, and there are issues down there. Okay, now we have asked for a presentation from the health department. I'm hoping that will come forward because so that we can address those issues. They have lots of concerns down there, and look, the staff down there are doing an amazing job, but they really do need to get a few things right down there.
Mm-hmm.
But thanks to everybody.
Thank you. Councillor Hooper?
Oh, yes, I too attended the HILC and Youth Leaders Collision
mm-hmm.
last month. And yep. It was a great night. They're doing a great job there. But the highlight, I think, is over the last few weeks was the fundraiser that was held in the stadium on Saturday night.
Mm.
It was great to see just how many people the organisers managed to fit in there.
Mm.
It was really a good use of the stadium, and I was very impressed.
Mm. Great. Thank you. Councillor Jacob.
Madam Mayor, we had the South Hedland Business Association breakfast event at which time we were fortunate enough to have some good presenters in the form of the candidate for the leader of the Pilbara for the opposition, thank you Madam Mayor, yourself, and we also had Charter Hall who gave us a very encompassing presentation of the new shopping centre refurbishment, which was very enlightening and long awaited. And then we also had Gordon, the Director of Community, give us a presentation on the use of the Civic Centre and the proposal for workforce location. On top of that too, we had some discussions at the Youth Involvement Council relating to the front page, the unfortunate incident of the youth that was hospitalised in Perth for the sniffing. Mm-hmm. It is certainly something that is prevalent in this region, and I ask for council support in acknowledging and maybe creating creating avenues for which specialised services will be available for these at-risk youth, and something that we should consider at this level, and certainly bring it into discussion when we talk to our various stakeholders.
Thank you. Councillor Hunt?
Yes, I attended the CCG BHP Community Consultative Group meeting, where the main topic of conversation was the temporary barge landing on Finucane Island. They were informing the members of the CCG how it was going to be and some of the implications to the public. The other thing that was mentioned was the continuing large transport movements happening for the next couple of months.
Thank you. Thank you, councillors, for your efforts and endeavours over this past month. Okay, item 10, petitions, deputations, presentations, submissions, 10.1. I'd like to welcome David Snidden and Jason Hugh from New Energy Corporation. Welcome. Wherever you'd like to be. Okay, wherever we can help make sure you can operate that. And we might need to turn down the lights, maybe staff or someone.
Okay, I'm going to stay on this side. David, perhaps you can join me on this side so we can use the slide presentation. Thank you very much for the opportunity to come and present tonight. We're here to give an update on the Port Hedland Waste Energy Plan. And before I start, can I just say a big congratulations to the Town of Port Hedland on the Tiny Towns Award. It's something very dear to our heart, and you know, it's a really worthwhile thing, and one of the reasons that we're in Port Hedland. Okay, so I'm not here to give a technical presentation this evening. I've had the opportunity to do that in the past. But any project of this nature has a long gestation period, and we've certainly been working very, very hard with the EPA and the Land Corp in town to bring this project to Port Hedland. Tonight I'm going to give you a quick update. So as an overall snapshot of what we're trying to achieve, this is world's best practice waste management that we're bringing to Port Hedland. And we're going to do that by a very big investment in recycling, which we'll have a look at in a moment. But essentially it's about capturing solid waste that would otherwise go to landfill, putting it through a recycling operation to recover recyclables, and then to recover energy from the balance of that waste. And we'll have a look at the composition of the waste in a moment. And then we're going to put that energy that we create back into the Northwest Interconnecting System. If I have a look at the features of the plant, essentially it will take about 110,000 tonnes worth of waste per annum, and to achieve that we'll have 5 gasification trains. Now, that will actually produce 15.5 megawatts of electricity instantaneous that will then feed to the grid, and that's about enough for 20,000 homes, so it's a significant component. Now, of that energy, about 70% is then renewable. This will come from a biomass. We'll look at the other waste in a moment. We're really targeting some of the common waste we see in the Pilbara, such as tyres, can be processed very safely in this type of technology. So what we're talking about is baseload renewable energy. The sun doesn't need to shine, the wind doesn't need to blow. We'll be able to put this energy into the grid 24/7. So essentially what we're proposing is a sustainable waste and power solution. The location of the project is in the Budari Industrial Estate. We'll be pretty much the first tenant in there after the Olympia Power Station. Land Corp's putting quite a focus on developing that estate at the moment, and we look like we'll be one of the first tenants. So, I just want to start off by introducing the recycling investment. Any project of this nature is very complementary to recycling. For example, things like construction and demolition waste has a lot of sand and bricks, etc. We don't want to recover energy from that because it has a very low energy content, and that material can be recovered. So it's very important that we adhere to the waste hierarchy. We are represented by a very large, WA's large private waste management company, Instant Waste Management, and they have a very large materials recovery facility in Bayswater that's about to be open, and we're going to model our MRF on that technology. So I'm just going to throw up a couple of pictures. So essentially, mixed waste arrives at the project. and it's dumped onto an apron feeder. So obviously we like to see some source separation of things like glass, aluminium can, clean paper, etc. But the other stuff, which is simply put into a skip bin, can arrive in mixed sense, is put onto the apron feeder here and goes through a very complex chain of magnets, eddy currents, shaper screens, density separation, and also will be employing some people to assist in the MRF operation. This is the materials recovery facility in Bayswater, and appropriate time I'd like to invite members of the council to come and have a look at that and see what we'll be bringing to Port Hedland. After we get through the materials recovery stage, the waste that currently we go off the landfill, but we'll put into what's called a low temperature gas fire. As I said, I'm not here this evening to talk about the technical discussion there, but this is a picture of an operating plant in Malaysia. This particular plant takes about half of Malaysia's medical waste, and we'll be having five trains of this size to get to our full capacity. One train will always be on duty standby every time to ensure that if the waste arrives, we'll be able to take it. So, waste types, the sort of things that the project will be able to recover energy from, MSW, construction, commercial and industrial waste, construction and demolition waste, tyres, and some liquid waste. As I said, all waste received will go through a materials recovery facility. New Energy has been part of the Pilbara Waste Management Association sub-branch for the last 2 years. We're making great contacts in regards to who can recycle things such as bricks, glass, sand, metals, etc. Okay, so I'm just going to update Council on the status of the project. The project received the highest level of environmental assessment, a public environmental review, because this will be the first project of its kind in Australia. So our public review period finished on the 15th of September. We didn't receive any submissions opposing the project, but I'm happy to say we received many submissions in support of the project. We've undertaken some pretty significant community consultation over the last couple of years, and certainly folks have pointed out to see the benefit of bringing this type of project to the town and fix some of the issues that may be with the current waste management practices. So the final EPA report is being drafted and will go to the board on the 17th of January. It's likely that we're going to get caught up in the state election and may not have a ministerial approval at that time. But that's okay, time's on our side, and as I said before, the project is on target. Certainly, it'll be the first approved in Australia, and we're hoping to make sure it's the first delivered in Australia. So we've just actually submitted a planning application to the Town of Port Hedland today, because of its size, it's also subject to the development application panel. The land out there is zoned strategic industry, meaning that the council approves it. The land use being not just industry, hopefully will be permitted. And the project meets the requirements in regards to the special control areas in the Budari estate, being an industrial buffer and the gas power station buffer. Okay, I'm going to throw over to David Seddon, a New Energy CEO. My journey with this project so far has been about gaining land tenure and also progressing environmental approval. And now David is on board to work with me to ensure that we can progress it through the financial stages.
Thank you, Jason. Look, first I'd like to recognise what Jason has done in terms of bringing new energy to the stage that we are at now, and also thank the role that Council has played in that. This has been a couple of year journey, as Jason described, particularly with regard to EPA approval or getting it on the cusp of EPA approval, land tenure, etc. So I think it's demonstrated a partnership approach thus far. Where we are now, however, is really at the point where we're down to the business end of this project. So I'd like to thank Council for the opportunity of updating at this very critical juncture as to where we are. As Jason said, I've come on board recently, and the focus now is really in the commercial focus of the business. The waste supply agreements. Now, this is all related to financial close activities. We have a runway of some 6 to 8 months to go through to our final investment decision and then to our financial close, which is all the funding activities. To give everyone a perspective on this, we are talking about an investment in the vicinity of $200 million. This is an investment which we as a private company will undertake in addition to the technology risk. But what is going to be critical is the partnership that we have with both some of the local governments in the Pilbara, particularly here based here in Port Hedland, and also the industry groups. So with that point, waste supply agreements is absolutely critical in terms of us now getting momentum on the waste supply agreements. As Jason articulated, we have a fabulous solution in terms of how we take waste and treat and manage waste. We recycle what we can recycle. Everything that can't and that would otherwise go to landfill will come through our low temperature gasification process. We are giving a waste management solution by virtue of that. In terms of power offtake agreements, we are currently engaged in discussions with Horizon, and we're also talking to industry alike in terms of the power offtake partners. Again, as Jason said, we are providing a renewable energy, something that is absolutely critical, not just in terms of an energy need in the Pilbara, but certainly in terms of renewable energy and achieving the targets and, again, sustainable outcomes as well. We've also engaged a designing, or will be a design construct partner. We've actually engaged a project engineer, someone who will project manage this journey through to our final investment decision. In addition to that, I'm working very closely with the law firm at the point, which is Holman Fenwick Willem. I have in brackets there Cheryl Edwards. We're actually very fortunate to have someone who's eminently experienced in this area in terms of her previous role, particularly as the first female Attorney General of Western Australia, also Minister of Environment, and a great advocate for what we are doing. And she's very passionate about this project. She's also very passionate about also the Pilgrim, her capacity as chairperson of the Port Hedland Industry Council. So we are working very closely with Cheryl across both the waste side and also the power offtake side in terms of progressing negotiations and also getting to conclusions around the agreements that we are putting in place. Our corporate advisors are Azure Capital, probably Perth's preeminent boutique corporate advisory. We're working very closely with them on all the funding arrangements. As I said, in the vicinity of $200 million, that's not coming just from our shareholders, that's going to come from certainly the equity markets and maybe some major infrastructure investors in the country or overseas, hopefully within the country, and also in terms of the debt providers as well. So there's a key role that we're playing working with Azure there in terms of concluding that up towards financial close. And as I've said there on the last point of the funding strategy, which is around the equity and debt partners. We fortunately have raised a lot of interest in this project from some major infrastructure investors in Australia and also overseas. That also is something that is putting through the Port Hedland. We've received much comment from the people, the third-party stakeholders in this, who are saying congratulations on choosing this as a location. It makes a lot of sense. We'll talk about the benefits in a moment with regard to that. I won't talk through this, but in the interest of time, and also there's a bit of detail on this. All I'd like to say, again, as I said, we're now taking this project on the good work that Jason has achieved thus far, and again, with support of council and the various directors in this regard. We are now down to the business end, and we really now need to start work on the waste and power offtake agreements. We look at having them signed off by August. Concurrently, we're working on our engineering phases, which also includes appointment of EPCs, which is the engineering, procurement and construction of the plant on the Budari estate. And then, importantly, the financial modelling and the funding strategy will run all the way through to April, which will be our final investment decision, then through to the financial close in September. That will put our plant operation at the end of 2014 or beginning, say, the first quarter of 2015. So this is a time frame which we're tracking to at the moment. What I'd like to do is just really conclude in terms of the benefits of the project. We're actually pretty passionate about what we represent as a business. We're fortunate enough, Jason and I, to be involved in a business that really has a meaning when we wake up in the morning. We actually know that we're providing a very, very valuable solution in the context of a waste management solution as well as a renewable energy solution. That is very helpful. It's almost critical because rest assured what we are doing is a very, very hard journey. However, we are now at the point where we're seeing the partnerships are coming to fruition and that's what's going to make this a success. As Jason said, this will be the first project of its kind in Australia. And it will be here in Port Hedland first and foremost. So it's what we call a Pilbara solution, but based here. Pilbara solution for waste management, certainly a Port Hedland solution when it comes to renewable energy. In terms of the key point here, private investment in sustainable waste infrastructure and renewable energy, we're talking about 25 years, and that's just our, what, you know, investment is that we call probably a medium time horizon in terms of investment. We're going to leave a very, very positive legacy through doing this. It's a waste management solution through the recycling diversion waste from landfill, and we've been to the landfills in the Pilbara, and really what there is, it's a merger, I think we all recognise them, it's not about doing, it's another generation at a point in time, but what is occurring now is not sustainable. We have to eliminate the long-term liability that is being created. And this is not just a Pilbara issue, rest assured everyone, this is happening in metropolitan Perth as well as around Australia, where we're calling on these solutions as well. Again, in terms of the vital energy solution, we understand the issues that exist. Yes, wind has a place, solar has a place, and tidal movements in terms of creating energy have a place, but what we're offering is a base load renewable power generation solution. The point next in terms of environmental protection and change adaption, again, the congratulations on winning the Tidy Town Sustainability Award. These things change behaviours, and sometimes it's generational changes, but these things are very visible to community and also to business, which really change culture and drive a positive outcome. We believe that this, in terms of from an environmental protection perspective, and what it means as a landmark project, is very important, not just at Port Hedland, but also the Pilbara, WA, and also Australia. In terms of the second last point, supports the Pilbara's objective being a sustainable place to live as well as the economic powerhouse. We've heard some questions and some comments and concerns around landfill tonight or this evening. We've also heard some concerns around real estate, congestion, sustainability, and all the issues that a community faces of having the benefit of a growing environment. What we all recognise is we need to bring sustainable solutions, and we can really hold our hands on our hearts when we look at our project and say that that will absolutely deliver that, not just for this generation but future generations, and will become the blueprint for these type of waste energy solutions. The last point, just to conclude, is really about the economic and environmental benefits for our foundation partner. Town of Port Hedland is our foundation partner. Not only is it where we're going to have our first plant based, we're also looking to the town of Port Hedland and also the industry partners up here in terms of providing us with our anchor volumes in terms of feedstock. Our feedstock is waste. By taking waste that would otherwise go to landfill, we're providing a solution. By providing them a process which creates a clean gas for our low temperature gasification, we have a renewable energy source. To do that and for this to be successful, we need the partnership of Town of Port Hedland. Again, I want to thank the support thus far. We're now into our phase where all the commercials will come to the forefront. We're into the business end of it now, and we look forward to engaging with you now purposefully going forward to make this a reality for Port Hedland and also the community. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions, councillors?
Yeah, a couple. What's your staff anticipated requirements on the project?
It'll be about up to 30 people.
Up to 30, yep. When you're talking about renewable partners or renewable energy for partners with the Town of Port Hedland, you're not referring to capital investment, it's only just the supply material?
No, currently people like Town of Port Hedland purchase energy from Horizon Power, and we'd like to consider to perhaps run the lights on the waste that's going in at a commercial level that is equal to what you're currently paying. It's just something that captures people's imagination as sustainable. We're talking to a number of people out there at the moment who are interested in the power, and we'd like to open that discussion with Town of Port Hedland as well.
That's not the surplus power, that's your ordinary power.
The base load power.
Yeah. And what about the comparable prices? I should imagine it's the same as Horizon Power.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you.
Any further questions, councillors?
How safe would it all be?
It's very safe. The vessel itself is not a pressure vessel. The whole system is under vacuum. So it's not there's no risk of explosion, etc. We'll be making a significant investment in regards to fire protection. That's very important for a plant of this nature. But from a hazardous perspective, this is a very safe plant. This plant is operating in many cities around the world in high-density areas, and we'll be able to regard it.
And
a quick, just to underscore that point, is that this technology has been tried and tested over 15, 20 years in Europe, it is the most mature market when it comes to waste-to-energy solutions. So tried and tested in very mature markets, very, very high requirements under the EU legislation.
Okay, thank you.
Any further
costs? Is that for yours?
transmission costs.
Transmission costs would be payable to the water power.
Any further questions, councillors? Okay, well, thank you very much for your presentation. Great.
Thank you.
Okay, 10.2, implications of asset management on the Town of Port Hedland leasing policy. Russell, Sarah, Trevor? Yep.
Through the chair, the presentation will be through Trevor and Sarah.
Right.
The first presentation is with regard to the asset framework, and looking at the tender item 12th of December, members of the council to consider the policy, the strategy, and the plan. And the second presentation tonight, which ties in fairly nicely, this is an update on the leasing policy. So, thought we should put the two together.
Mm.
Some of the council have seen this presentation before, but not everyone was here, so we've got an opportunity tonight before the item comes to council.
Thanks. I'm Trevor Seymour Jones. I'm from Think Projects, sub-consultant to KPMG, and I'm dealing with the asset management issues, advising the town on its asset management policy, strategy, and asset management planning. I firstly would also like to make my congratulations to the town on the award of the Hardy Town Sustainability Award. And I think also I'm going to be talking about a world's best practice not too distant from what you've just been hearing about. Firstly, I should be looking at an explanation of what asset management is. We have identified a number of elephants in the room in this respect, and it's got a huge scale. It represents hundreds of millions of dollars. The Department of Local Government has introduced the IPRF. We're looking at that. Another elephant to do with roles and accountabilities, the guidelines and standards that we have to follow. Elephant three, therefore, what does it mean for Port Hedland? And how asset management provides the answers to these problems and to these issues that are coming forward. What we've done to date with working with the town, and we have put forward a draft asset management strategy and a draft asset management plan that I'll be looking at. So, what is asset management? I guess I've come up with a little bit of an academic, but it isn't actually academic, but it's becoming an academic definition. It's about business planning. It's not about property management. It's not about facility management. It's not about maintenance. It's a high-level strategic business activity that is a subset of resource management planning. It is concerned also with sustainability. But it is, and with the future and levels of service. So we've got the sustainability for what we've got now, the sustainability of what we're going to invest in the future. That is to do with, also to do with behaviour, it is also to do with culture and an acceptance that this is a very key and significant aspect of managing the town's business. It is practiced internationally in the public sector, so we are talking about a world's best practice here. This has come off very much what's been happening in New Zealand and prior to that, and at the same time in the UK local government sector. It has been adopted by state governments throughout Australia and most local governments. I think that WA is probably the last state government to put across these planning regulations to its local administrations. Good process will give this clear understanding of how to manage what is required, what assets are required, how long we're going to need them, how much they're going to cost, and when to renew them, when to close them down, and any new ones we need. This introduction of asset management process is no magic wand. It's going to take time. There's a journey of 4 or 5 years to go. So, in a nutshell, this is about providing a desired level of service in the most cost-effective manner for our current and future outcomes of investing in the future, as well as providing services at the moment. Now, the first element is the scale of what this is for the town. Now, clearly local governments rely on their assets to provide services to the community, but it is not often appreciated the extent of the assets that are employed for this. Here we have an asset base of about $575 million that we have identified for the town. That is a replacement estimate of over $500 million for the town's assets. The implications are that if our assets don't work properly at a base level, then, you know, and if this building fails, if the ICT fails, council won't be able to collect its rates. It won't be able to provide services to the community. And it won't be able to sustainably maintain its own administration. Very briefly, the local government legislative context, this was enacted in August last year, and its purpose is to plan long-term delivery of services to the community in a financially sustainable manner. The planning framework starts with community engagement and the forming of a strategic community plan. This has already happened. The town has achieved this. The town has consulted the community. We are now in the process of finalising the town's corporate business plan, or it may even at this stage be close to completion. And that feeds down the hierarchy to the annual budget. And then there's the main question of measuring and reporting this through the annual reports to the community. Now, there are strategies that inform these documents and vice versa, and we are today concerned with assets. Now, the asset framework, asset management framework, has largely also been set through the integrated planning and reporting strategy of local government. We have three principal guiding documents. Firstly is an asset management policy, which is an overarching document that council will endorse to set the guidelines for the administration on how assets are to be managed. There will be those key principles, there'll be commitments, and there will be commitments to the preparing asset management strategies, asset management plans, and reviewing them on a regular basis. The strategies will set the asset management objectives and describe the practices that the town's administration will follow. It is also required by local government that, by the state government, that local governments have improvement programs in place. There must be a process whereby continual improvement is followed. The plan itself really is the conversion of that strategy into action and a plan of action. And that deals with levels of service, demands for service, the basic demand sets, where the money is going to go, the life cycle activity of the assets themselves, and then individual plans. The Department of Local Government describes two levels of capability, core and advanced. We have found, and it's not just in WA, but it's across Australia, that where these frameworks have been introduced and reporting requirements imposed or brought into play for local governments, that most jurisdictions are not really prepared for this, and that their capacity for asset management practice is not particularly high. So What the DLG is setting is a core level of capacity that basically says you should be looking at a whole of life approach to your assets. Plan, you have to have good information to be able to plan well. You have to identify your critical and mission critical assets and define the levels of service that are required for those assets to perform, to provide community services. Then we've got to be looking at prioritising capital works, doing a 10-year long-term financial plan, measures of performance, and again review for improvement. Now there is an advanced level of capability which is not much more advanced than the core, but I do note it is not a best practice. Advanced is not best practice, advanced is really a definition for the state government. Now, the base standards that the IPRF are putting forward is that we must have an asset management policy. We must have a strategy that includes plans for major asset classes. Now here we're talking about roads, there's an airport here, we're talking about major buildings, there are parks and ovals, a whole range of assets. And we need to have processes that link the management of those assets into the financial management of the town. Governance is a very big topic that really is the number one starter here, and I'll come on to that a little bit later. And there must be good data, firm and certain data and information, and systems to support decision making in asset management. And of course we need those skills and processes. The skills for asset management relate to business skills, financial skills, economic skills, property management skills, or property skills generally, engineering skills. Now, the roles and responsibility and accountability. This is actually defined in the guidelines and framework from the Department of Local Government. But what it means for council is that all asset decisions made by council have got to show that they are sustainable and they've got to show that they reflect community expectations. And there are clearly defined accountabilities for each level of representation and management within council. Your council itself, the elected members, are responsible for the town's policy and strategy. It is not just a document that is being devised and set aside. It is a dynamic, living document that is capable of being tested, examined and tested. Your councillors, your elected members, are the stewards of your assets and the sponsors of how they're managed and how the portfolio develops and grows and changes. And they are there to make the asset decisions that enable the town's organisation to implement sustainable asset management programs. The CEO has the overall responsibility for corporate objectives and planning. So he is the master of the town's direction, short-term, medium-term and long-term. Now, when those corporate or organisational objectives are approved by council, they then need to be translated into plans and strategies. That is the role we see of the directors of the administration, and then further down implementation through the management levels. This, at the moment, we have an asset management working group that has been working with us to develop the processes, and the working group comprises directors and at managerial level. Now, I have a little bit of a video here.
that is a lot more interesting than me. This is a little, it's quite fun, but it is also a very poignant message.
That he can present the award because I'm supposed to present the Mayor Award, but he can present it.
Sydney, but do we have it?
No.
No, my apologies for that one. What it was telling us, and I don't know if any of you managed to get a sense from the sort of simply the video side of things, is that it's the importance of planning. What we have here is a limited bucket of resources, principally money, and some fairly significant competing elements putting their hands out or into that money bucket. But so this really, what the video was saying there is that, look, prioritise, plan 10 years, identify the core and significant assets, and prioritise your planning on that basis in your allocation of resources and funds. We won't get roads that break up, and we won't get libraries that fall down and rooms that leak and so on. Now, excuse me. The asset management guidelines and standards that have been set by the Department of Local Government, there is some good news in all this. It gives recognition to that if it is something that's going to take time, it is something that's going to take change, it's going to take change in attitude, it's going to take change in skills. It's going to happen over a number of years, and for some councils, they're going to be quite a number of years. It also recognises that councils are at different stages of their asset management maturity, and some are going to be at this much longer than others. It's interesting to note that this 80% of councils reported a limited capacity to plan for asset maintenance and renewal in 2009. Now that was self-assessed. Those are councils that assessed themselves. And a few years before that, in 2004, there was some research done by DEGW and Cornet Global, which is a corporate real estate group out of the States, that looked at the corporate real estate industry in Australia. And for corporate real estate, we asset management, basically. It found that something like 70% of Australian corporates did not have a documented asset management strategy or plan. It also found that it was the public sector that engaged the least in this process. So I think that I don't believe much has changed since 2004, certainly in the corporate world, but the public sector is beginning to pick up its act, and I think really the act is being led through local government. State governments should be practicing what they preach, but that's not always the case. So, we've been through the objectives before, and the whole of organisation approach. It's got to be integrated. Asset management has got to be integrated with business planning and business management. In terms of the meaning for Port Hedland, here's the context of the town, and we've heard that earlier today with the new energy presentation. But in 20 years, the town is scheduled to have, or scheduled to have a population of about 50,000. That's 1.5 times now. There will be an improved airport. There's going to be significant demand for improved, new, and extra infrastructure. The services that are being provided now could potentially change completely in not so much what the services are, but their type and how they are delivered. And these have strong asset implications. Within all that, there's a business as usual issue that the town needs to manage. That's today. That's the management of the assets today, and the provision of services to the community through those assets. But the big elephant here, I think, is beware of the gifted assets, and you'll see in a moment what this means. It's very nice, perhaps, for some of you to come along, state government or some generous donor, to say, here's a new something or other, but there are implications to that. So how will we know what is what to build, what's required, how much, what can the town afford to build, what can it maintain. Now, firstly we have to know what we've got. And really this is just a bit of a snapshot of a roadside, by the way, it's not in Portsmouth. But there are a dozen or so plus different types of assets there. Are those assets fit for purpose? What condition are they in? Again, this is not a photograph from something before heaven, but here is a building of some sort. It looks as though it might be a pavilion of an oval. But you can see the condition of it and the condition of the roof. It might be okay. It might be keeping the water out. So perhaps the priority is not so much there to put on a new roof, but it's an example. These are public conveniences, also not for Headland, but you can see top left looks pretty, plush, but pretty smart. Next to it on the right, probably the one underneath is probably the next one down, and then on the right, and then the one at the bottom right. But really, what is the best, what's the best one? What's the one that, what level of service does the community need in any particular area? Now, it so happens that that nice and plush one top left, the community in this area thought it was terrible. It looks nice, but it's awful inside. Security is bad for ladies, and the design is poor. I do believe that it was this one that was the best out of these four. In that it was functional, it was clean, and it was providing the need, the absolute need, for the circumstances. So what will assets cost? We need to know what we own first of all, and that's an exercise that we've been going through with the town. You need to understand condition and expected life. The levels of service the community needs, some examples we've just seen, the priorities, and I'm going to come to the issue of long-term funding in a moment. It's something that is the renewal gap, renewal and replacement gap. Here is a gifted asset. Barbecue was gifted to a local council. This is a real live example. Its value, or rather its cost, was $8,000. But in 1 year, it costs nearly $10,000 to operate and maintain. So over a life of 10 years, we've got something like, in crude terms, $100,000 worth of asset liability. So it is nice to have a barbecue somewhere, but is it demanded? Is it in the right place? Is it being used? And really, is it worth it? Now that's just in the pure financial sense, but it gives an indication of the sustainability or the ability of the town or local council to sustain these assets, its own assets. There is still only a limited bucket of money for operations and maintenance. So we need to adopt a new sort of financial paradigm. There is this long-term planning issue. But really here, I think the new paradigm is at the bottom of the slide, the annual operating plans. We need to look at the remaining life of our assets. We need them to define what work needs to be done for them. We need them to define how important they are, where they are. Should they be closed? Are they surplus? Should they be disposed of? So it's that type of planning and deriving annual budgets from that type of analysis. Now here is the renewal and replacement gap. This is just one of the financial indicators that we've been looking at for the town. it's probably the most relevant and most telling. What this does is to compare our assessment of the renewal and expenditure required on your assets, all asset types, between now and 2021-22. This assessment has been carried out against a reasonably, a visual inspection of assets and the collection of those assets into a single database and an estimation of what it might cost to bring those, the condition of those assets back to what might be considered to be the correct rating. So, and then we've compared the budget expenditure in the current five-year plan, and really there is a difference between the two. And what we're suggesting is that we have a gap of about 163 million over the next 10 years to fund replacement and renewal of your existing asset portfolio. Now, that actually is a reasonably, compares very reasonably to some other local councils. Some councils are up to the 600 million mark. But what it does point to, and this is reasonably crude, but what it does point to again is the need. Let's look at these assets. Let's see whether we really need to spend 163 million over the next 10 years. Are they going to remain with us? Are they still useful? Are they still relevant? Do they have a future? And, you know, we can put out a 10 to 20 year plan for this on just existing assets to look to reduce that gap, probably or hopefully down to close to nothing. And some actions within that will be closure, mothball, disposal. So therefore, we'll be grading the expenditure that we need to put on our existing assets. Well, I probably answered this question through the sort of general chat, so on. But how does asset management help provide the answer? Okay, it provides a framework. It provides a discipline. It provides a policy and it provides process and an implementation for a strategy. What has been achieved so far over the last year or so in looking at compliance with the requirements of the integrated planning and reporting framework of Department of Local Government? We have policy. There's going to be a policy, I think the 12th of December, I'm not sure, at your council meeting. There's going to be the policy presented to council for adoption. So we've done that. It's a good policy. It's robust. And it seems to have a sort of passion about it as well. We have developed an asset management strategy that includes all the requirements of the Department of Local Government. Again, that strategy will be going before council for adoption. And we have developed a process for evaluating the asset management plans. That is converting that strategy into action and a process for a world's best practice process, because this is actually what it is, to be introduced for the holistic management and overall management of your assets. And that will go all the way down to individual asset management plans. And we have now linked this to the annual report, which was the final requirement. Now, in developing the strategy, we've tried to create a vision for our asset management. So we've come up with a sort of phrase of, let's have high performing and sustainable assets. Now, we can look at other councils that they might have sustainable and high performing assets. They don't, but you know, it's very difficult. But there needs to be something here that we become passionate about and committed to, and an approach to
manage our assets in accordance with the policy, which does talk about adoption of international standards of practice. And it is about the community. It is about meeting the community's priorities and aspirations, providing and the needs of the town. But all that still has to be balanced within the overall financial context and financial viability size of that bucket. Very quickly again, we've come up with five pillars as strategic objectives. We need to set direction and accountability for this new journey, this new process. And there is a little bit of a mystique or mystery, if you like, about this, about asset management. We need to adopt a life cycle approach. We need to make sure that we have all the right data and information to enable us to make decisions. There has to be agreements on levels of service, the standard levels. Now, those levels of service relate to the community, they relate to technical issues, and they relate to internal issues, internal to the town's administration. Because asset management is actually managing the internal assets of the town, of the administration, such as IT, such as fleet, such as council buildings and so on, that enable the provision of services. Continuous improvement. There must be a way of monitoring and improving asset management. This very quickly, quickly brush over is the process. This is the best practice process currently that has come out of the UK, published by the Event Practice Guidelines by the Royal Institution of Chartered Surveyors. We look at organised the objectives of the town, and we convert those objectives in an asset sense to make the assets align with what the town wants to achieve. We then look at developing asset programs, that is business cases, that is projects and so on. They then get delivered, so too do the ongoing services get delivered, the whole thing gets reviewed, changed and start again. This is the fourth element, the asset management plan. I've identified probably, I think it was about a dozen, 14 real priorities to attack first. This plan is only for 3 years. It is changeable, it is dynamic, but what it is seeking to achieve is to convert the strategies that we've put forward into action to ensure that the town puts itself in a position to effectively and sustainably manage its asset base. So quite simply, this is the beginning, this is the first plan, and we're dealing with process, we're dealing with introduction of change here, and upskilling and behaviour as well, and culture. Yes, thank you very much. I'm sorry that we had an interruption, and it was a reasonably lengthy briefing as well, so thank you very much for your time.
Any questions for Trevor? Thank you, Trevor. Very comprehensive.
Thank you.
Okay, Sarah, you're going to talk to us about this.
Ten years.
That's the fact that it was one of the asset management questions that started now all the way through to the next
one. It's a big issue.
Well,
you
were just trying to prove the point then, weren't you?
That's just scratching the surface. I've got to do this on a Jan's slice, Arnold. You can't have it all.
I'm going to go to the mall.
up to something about.
Maybe we should have the presentations of the silent room.
So, through you, Madam Mayor, because of the technical difficulties, we may need to postpone this one to the 12th of December.
Yep.
And run that presentation.
You're okay with that, sir? I know you put a lot of work into that. Okay. All right, as long as you're happy, we're happy. Happy councillors. Mm-hmm. Thanks for that. Okay, you're good. After I just put a new lolly in my mouth, thank you everyone. They are very nice. Okay, reports of officers, item 11. Just a first before I do, just an important note and disclaimer. Members of the public are cautioned against taking any action on council decisions on items on this evening's agenda in which they may have an interest until formal notification in writing by council has been received. Decisions made at this meeting can be revoked pursuant to the Local Government Act 1995. And without any further ado, item 11.1.1, amended Town of Port Hedland Building Service Fee and Charge Structure for Non-Regulated Building Services. This item has been withdrawn. So, councillors, I now direct you to page 20. Item 11.1.2, proposed permanent partial closure of Draper Place, South Hedland. The officer's recommendation on page 23. Do I have any points for clarification?
No.
Move, Councillor Carter. Second, Councillor Jacobs. Any against? Motion carried 6-0. Item 11.1.3, proposed 5 multiple dwellings development on lot 2, in brackets 88, Kingsmill Street, Port Hedland. The officer's recommendation on page 30. Do I have any points of clarification?
No.
Move, Councillor Jacobs. Second, Councillor Hunt. Do I have any against? Motion carried 6-0. Okay, we're on page 55. Item 11.1.4, proposed 18 multiple dwellings on lot 250 in brackets 70 Morgan Street, Port Hedland, with the officer's recommendation on page 60. Do I have any points of clarification?
I'd like to make an addition to the officer's recommendation. If we could add a point to add item 24 and to the words effective of council authorising the director of planning to review the current parking policy to ensure consideration in alignment with Australian standards so that we don't have a conflict of what the town's recommendation for parking is and what the Australian standards.
You're comfortable with that, Director?
So, Chairman, I'm comfortable with wording, but I'd probably suggest that should be item B because we don't want to actually put it to motion. I think if we separate it from the office recommendation, A would start with 1, so we need to have a colon.
Yeah.
And we'll at the end have a second part of the recommendation, which is B, and just put Dr. Planning Dogs to review the car parking requirements to ensure that a minimum of 97 car parking bays and future developments are constructed in accordance with the plan of the car parking provision.
To the Australian standard.
To the
Australian standard.
Well, this is what this application is suggesting, is that their parking meets Australian standards, but not the town's parking requirements. So if we're going to be advised that that's okay, but in fact that it's okay, then the town should either reconsider its policy or align it with along the lines that you said that 90% is. Just a review.
Yep.
And bring back to council its recommendation.
I think my
wording covers that. Through the mayor, if we just did it as a review of the policy.
That's what I said.
You're okay with that, governance? You're okay? Everyone's okay? All right. So I have a mover and Councillor Jacob. Do I have a seconder? Yes, Councillor Hunt. Do I have any against? Motion carried 6-0.
For A and B.
Yes, yeah, that was the whole lot. Everyone's happy? You're okay, Governance?
Yep. Yeah. Great.
So it's just an addition, there's no reason or anything? Righto, good. Alright, 11.1.5, proposed 12 multiple dwellings on lot 500 in brackets 37 Moore Street, Port Hedland. The officer's recommendation on page 77. Moved Councillor Carter, seconded Councillor Jacob. Do I have any against? Motion carried 6-0.
Move to
no interest?
No.
11.1.6, proposed accession of reserve 28372 being lot 5209 McGregor Street, Port Hedland, Kumbana Lookout. Is the officer's recommendation on page 101. Do I have any points of clarification?
No clarification.
Move, Councillor Hunt. Seconded, Councillor Jacob. Do I have any against? Motion carried 6-0. Item 11.1.7, Ministerial Order in terms of Section 76 in brackets 1 of the Planning and Development Act 2005 to initiate proposed Scheme Amendment 52 on lot 226, Greenfield Street, Badari. The officer's recommendation commencing page 107. Do I have any points of clarification?
Madam Mayor, I do. This, I take this interpretation purely only for the application for a EPA. Is that correct?
CEO?
Through the chair, the person is actually initiated the scheme. So initiation actually means referral to the EPA and then public advertising, and then after that occurs the contract council.
Contract the council for clarification.
Yep, consideration. Yep.
Yes. This present moment, all we're doing is making the application to the EPA.
Yes,
not just to the EPA, it goes...
No, initiated. It's a formal initiation, so the process to actually amend the scheme is commenced. The next step is to refer it to the EPA. The EPA comes back with any requirements, and then it gets advertised for a two-day period. After that period, it comes back to council
for deliberation.
And then council can consider whether to refer or to proceed with it or not, and then refer that recommendation to the minister.
Any further points of clarification? Move, Councillor Jacob. Seconded.
Yes.
Councillor De Cash. Any against? Motion carried 6-0. Okay, item 11.1.8, proposed road dedication being a portion of lot 567 on plan 71689 on unallocated Crown land, South Hedland. The officer's recommendation on page 113. Do I have any points of clarification? Move, Councillor Carter. Seconded, Councillor Jacob. Do I have any against? Motion carried 6-0. On page 116, item 11.1.9, proposed modification to final adoption of Scheme Amendment 54 to the Town of Port Hedland Town Planning Scheme No. 5, rezoning from Urban Development R20 to Residential R30 and R40 and other purposes. The officer's recommendation on page 120. Move, Councillor Carter. Seconded, Councillor Jacob. Any against? Motion carried 6-0. Item 11.2.1, Port Hedland Motorcycle Club lease lot 145, Great Northern Highway, Port Hedland. The officer's recommendation commencing page 128. Do I have any points of clarification?
No clarification.
Move, Councillor De Cash. Seconded, Councillor Hunt. Do I have any against? Motion carried 6-0. Well done, councillors. Item 11.2.2, request to dispose of land at Port Hedland International Airport, CLA Trading, Pty Limited, Europcar Leasee. Thanks everyone. Page 166, I have an officer's recommendation. Do I have any points of clarification? Moved, Councillor Carter. Seconded, Councillor Jacob. Do I have any against? Motion carried 6-0. Item 11.3.1, proposed percent public art strategy and policy, adoption for advertising and consultation. with the officer's recommendation on page 172. Do I have any points of clarification?
Yes, Madam Mayor, there's one clarification. I take it from this policy that this is only incorporated as from anything that exceeds $5 million.
Zero?
Through Madam Mayor, that's as the current policy is written.
Yes.
The intent today is seeking council support to actually advertise it for public comment.
That's right. Yeah, but the $5 million is the maximum, the minimum.
It's the threshold.
Yeah.
Any further points of clarification? So move, Councillor Carter, seconded Councillor Jacob.
Madam Mayor, and I take the opportunity to congratulate the planning department on the creation of this policy. I think it'll benefit.
Well, once it gets carried, we've got a mover and a seconder. Have I got anyone against? Motion carried 6-0. Well done, Councillor Jacob. Item 11.4.1.1, reconsideration of rates concessions for the Royal Flying Doctor Service. Councillor Carter.
Yes, Madam Mayor, I'd like to put an amendment to this. I'd like to put an amendment in that the council pay for one third of these houses, not the full amount, that the amount of $5,000 be credited to Flying Doctor Service in conjunction with their application for a complete refund.
I have a point of clarification on that resolution. My understanding is that the rates for the total would be $40,000, so a third would be more than that, wouldn't it?
Well,
more than
$13,000.
Yeah. So are we recommending $5,000?
Yes.
Or $5,000?
Yeah, $5,000.
Point of clarification. I don't understand a word that's been said then.
Councillor Carter, please repeat what you're proposing.
I need clarification.
The clarification is that there is an application in here for a refund of $40,380 in rates.
Yep.
That's the application. That gives a whole lot of them. What I'm saying is that we give a one third of the rate applicable at $40,000, which brings that down to $13,000. It's a one third.
So they still pay two-thirds,
yes.
We give a subsidy of one-third.
Correct. I might add this is not the only supplement we do. We also pay quite a considerable amount in landing fees out there, about 40,000.
Okay, so I have a mover for an alternate recommendation by Councillor Carter. Do I have a seconder?
I'll second.
Yep. Seconded by Councillor Hunt. Do I have any against? Motion carried 6-0. Well done. And a reason, Councillor Carter?
I think that they are a worthy contribution and there's a lot to ask the council for $40,000, especially after we've contributed their budgets, if they have to pick up the debts to the CC for $40,000 to the budget. I do think it's a contribution.
Just check, mate. Clarify with me, please.
Well, it was one third.
$40,000
instead of $13,000, I think. Yep, one third or 33%. Governance, you're okay with that? Okay, item 11.4.1.2, interim financial reports to council for period ended 30th September 2012. Do I have any points of clarification? And they'll be amended in the minutes accordingly. Councillors are all happy with that?
Yeah.
Quite clear? Great. Moved Councillor Jacob, seconded Councillor Carter. Do I have any against? Motion carried 6-0. Item 11.4.2.1, Town of Port Hedland audio recording of council and committee meetings with the officer's recommendation on page 221.
Do other councils actually ask for a fee for the public to gain access to recording?
CEO?
Through Madam Mayor, yes, my understanding is that many councils charge where there's an additional administrative burden to either produce an audio recording onto a disc or some other form, then fees are charged by some local governments.
May I ask, is it $20 or less or more?
I'm not aware of the exact figures across the local government industry.
Do I have any further points of clarification?
Yes, Madam Mayor, if I may. Under this new proposal, it is under Resolution 1995, I take it that this one now, this proposal is that any information may be gained by the, from the councillors or committee members without any reference to the information as previously stated that was necessary.
Yep. Through this through. Is a new policy?
Yes.
This is making ensuring that elected members have access to all the information they require.
That's what we want.
Move Councillor Carter, seconded Councillor Jacob. Do I have any against? Motion carries 6-0. In light of that recommendation that's been passed, and as per your questioning before, Mr Blanco, there'll be a procedural form that will be produced and put on our website. In the interim, please write or email to the CEO, so either address it to the CEO at PO Box 41, Port Hedland, or email it to CEO@PortHedland, all smalls, all one word, .wa.gov.au, to make arrangements to obtain recordings. Unfortunately, I couldn't go through that until we'd actually passed or done something tonight. Okay. Now we're up to late items as permitted by Chairperson Council. We do indeed have one. Item 12.1, proposed scheme amendment number 62 for the Town of Port Hedland Town Planning Scheme number 5 to rezone lot 452 Morgan Street, Port Hedland, from community in brackets health to West End residential. The officer's recommendation on page 6. There is also a late item. Councillors, you might have this separate sheet here as well. As an alternate officer's recommendation.
Should we have a resolution to accept the late item first?
No, don't want to. No. Everyone's happy. All right, so do I have any points of clarification? Do I have a mover for the alternate recommendation? Yes, move Councillor Jacob, seconded Councillor Carter. Do I have any against? Motion carried 6-0. Okay, item 13, reports of committees. Yep, that's all right, isn't it? Yep. Okay, 13.1, Airport Committee on the 25th of October. By all accounts, very solid meeting there. We have a recommendation. Do I have any points of clarification?
That's not so
moved. Move Councillor Carter, seconded Councillor Jacob. Do I have any against? Motion carried 6-0. Okay, item 14, motions of which previous notice have been given. 14.1, Councillor Gillingham, notice of motion from the 24th of October 2012. Have an officer's recommendation on page 231.
Madam Mayor, I'd like to put in an impartiality on this motion due to the fact that I've been named in the motion.
Mm-hmm.
So with regard to item 14.1, I disclose that I have an association with the applicant. As a consequence, there may be a perception of my impartiality on the matter may be affected. I declare that I will consider this matter on its merits and vote accordingly.
Thank you, Councillor De Cash.
You also like me to put an impartiality because I...
Totally up to you. Councillors decide their own interests.
So I'd like to put an impartiality regarding this item. With regard to the fact I disclose I have an association with the applicant, as a consequence there may be a perception that my impartiality on the matter may be affected, I declare that I will consider this matter on its merits and vote accordingly.
Thank you, Councillors. Any points of clarification?
Yeah, one point of clarification, if I may, Madam Mayor. It's under 17.2, 17.3.
Which page, sir?
On page 223, this is it. You've itemised the two items, 17.3 and 17.2.
Sorry. Which page and item are you talking about, Council?
No, it's just a clarification.
It's a clarification on standing.
Page 229, there's through the chair, 17.2 and 17.2.
Sorry, who's asking the question? Councillor Carter started asking.
Right. Thank you, yep. Chair, just to let you know.
On page 229, you have Town of Port Hedland, you have the standing orders clarification. You have 17.2
mm-hmm.
and 17.4.
Mm-hmm.
I'd also like to refer to state there that the meeting had been adjourned. I would like to state again and advise you of standing orders, which quite categorically states that
Maybe I find it.
So this is a point of clarification.
Yes. Well, Councillor Carter's limit.
No. Just having a point of clarification.
No, it's up to the minister.
Any further points of clarification?
Yeah, what if I get this, can't find it. Well, I'd like to see if we can get out of the camera, Madam Mayor, because we've got this issue before we handle it soon.
Do I have a support for a motion to go in confidence to consider this item?
Yes, I support that.
Okay, move Councillor De Cash, seconded Councillor Carter. Do I have any against? Motion carried 6-0 to go in confidence. So,
for members of the public, that means the council needs to wishes to discuss this matter without members of the public or officers present.
Apart
from the CEO.
Could the minute take us by? Especially Grace.
I'll go get a member, but probably be 12 o'clock.
Councillor Carter could probably walk faster than you.
We'll get
Mal to do it.
Mal, put in a review of your salary straight away.
Welcome back, members of the public. Sorry, we... Councillor Carter, Councillor Jacob, stop. We took the liberty of considering two confidential items, item 15.1 and 15.2. All confidential items considered were passed as per the officer's recommendation. Okay, item 16, applications for leave of absence. Deputy Mayor?
No.
Councillor Carter?
No.
Councillor Gillingham?
No.
Councillor Jacob? No. Councillor Hunt?
No, I'm here for a long haul now.
Okay, no leave of absence at all. Okay, that's fantastic. Well, councillors and staff, and particularly governors, thank you very much for all that. I declare the meeting closed at 7:58. Our next ordinary meeting of council, which is the last one for the year, will be held on Wednesday, the 12th of December, commencing at 5:30 p.m. Thank you very much, everyone, for your efforts.
Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Arnold, telling the CEO you're here on the 12th?
Yes.
Yep.